So Genesis chapter 22. So today's account takes place in the life of Abraham. And this is the story. We call them stories because we teach them to kids and stuff, but they're accounts, they're real events. This story, though, it's the sacrifice of his son Isaac. And if you're not familiar with this event, that description, when I say the sacrifice of his son Isaac, probably sounds a little crazy. If you're not familiar with this situation, with this story, Abraham's sacrifice of his son Isaac. But before we revisit this story, this situation, this event, I want to remind you who Abraham is because it helps. It's important. So Abraham used to be called Abram, and he was chosen by God to be a significant part of God's plan to restore his relationship with humanity. Abram's job was to, part of this promise, part of this plan, Abram's job was to trust God and be a father. That's all he had to do. Trust God and be a father. And God would do his part. The specific promise that God made with Abram, we call it a covenant, which means that it was binding, and it was that God would give Abram and his descendants the land of Canaan, which today we would call either Palestine or Israel or both, depending on which side of the political spectrum you come from. To give his descendants the land of Canaan, and that Abraham's family would be a vast nation, and one of his descendants, far in the future, would bless the world, would be a gift to the entire world. And that offspring we know was Jesus, providing and offering the salvation that men need from sin as a gift from God to the world. Now, that's a long way off, but that was the promise. Land, descendants, and be a blessing. And all that it meant for Abraham was that he had to trust God and be a father. That's all he had to do. But that was the tricky part, right? If you're familiar with Abraham's story and his life, that's the tricky part because Abraham was 75 and his wife Sarah was 65. I don't want to say publicly that that's old, but that's old if you're going to be a parent, right? That's up there. We're beyond, and they say it too, childbearing years. And so God made this promise to Abraham when he was 75, you're going to have this land, you're going to have descendants, and one of your descendants is going to be a blessing. You just have to trust God and be a dad. And he said, here's a problem though, I'm not a dad, and I'm 75, and my wife is 65. And God said, well, that's the promise. That's what we're doing. And so Abraham struggled with his part. He struggled with the trust God and be a father part. He wasn't a father, and so trusting God didn't come easy. And that's what his story reveals to us. As you read his story, he struggles with this trust part. Like, he promised this, but now I'm 85. He promised this, but now I'm 95. And he struggles with that, trusting God to stay true to his promise. And after 25 years, he didn't have any kids. And then God reminded Abraham of his promise. Land, descendants, you're going to be a blessing to the whole world because of one of your offspring. You just need to trust God and be a father. And though at that point he was 100 years old, and Sarah, his wife, was 90 years old, and yet that year Sarah became pregnant and gave birth to their son Isaac. And all Abraham had to do was trust God and be a father. That's all he had to do. And God was faithful. So now we're going to fast forward. That's your background information, your context, okay? It was a fast trip through Abraham's life. So now we're going to fast forward 20 more years. Abraham, Sarah, and Isaac have a life now. Yes, I've left out some significant details, but they have a life now. Isaac is a young man, though he's not yet married, and so we're still in the trust God and be a father phase, right? Because Abraham has a son, but his son doesn't have a wife, and she doesn't have, so they don't have any kids, so there's no grandchildren right now, and God promised descendants and a blessing, and so Abraham's job is still to trust. Trust God and be a father. And it's at that point that God comes to Abraham with a test. Genesis chapter 22, look at the first two verses. So sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham, here I am," he replied. And then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah, sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you." So a few things. So Moses is writing this account. He's writing this for us, and he's writing it well after the fact. This is not like, he's not doing like a sports broadcast where he's like, okay, so God just said this. Abraham's reply, right, was "Here I am," and then God dropped this on him. Let's see what happens. He already knows what's going to happen. He's already familiar with the story, and he wants to teach us some things about God and about ourselves. And so Moses helps us, the reader, by revealing right away, before we panic, right, when we read this, that God's instruction to Abraham was a test. He's like, you need to know this right away, because what God is about to ask him is going to sound insane. So you need to know, the reader, you have to know right away, God is testing Abraham. Sometime later, God tested him and made this request. However, this is important. This is going to be a test of faith, a test of trust. But the test wasn't to prove anything to God. God already knows how this is going to end. He already knows what's in Abraham's heart, what's in Abraham's mind. This test is to prove nothing to God. This test was to prove something to Abraham. The test was for Abraham to see the results so he could see what happens. And this is important because we know, you read that verse 1 and you see this is a test, and maybe you've never thought of this before. Abraham had no idea this was the test. He didn't have a clue that God already knew what the grade was, that God already knew how this was going to go. He had no idea this was a test and that it was a setup. All he knew was what God asked. And so this test was for Abraham to see the results. Maybe those of you with kids can understand this, or maybe this has happened to you at work. You sometimes put a person in a situation they think they can't handle so they can see that they can handle it. Because you know, because I know. And so sometimes you get your kid in a position where you say, "Just jump into the water, I know you can do it." And then you walk away, right? It's not a test for you. You're not trying to find out if they can. It's a test for them to see that they can, right? And that's what's happening here for Abraham. He doesn't know this is a test. He has no idea that God already knows what's about to happen, what's going to go on. But Moses knows that what God asks Abraham to do was shocking and seems totally outside of God's character. And so he tells us ahead of time as a test, because it does. Verse 2, if you think, okay, I know God, I know God's character, he's a God of love, right? God doesn't delight in like child sacrifice. And then God says, "Here's what I want you to do though. I want you to go take your son and I want you to make him a burnt offering for me, to me, because you love me." That seems totally outside of God's character, doesn't it? Doesn't seem like something God would ever actually enjoy or want if it's the God that I know. So this is a very big test for Abraham, because his mind would be reeling. Like, hold on a second. What do you mean, kill my son because you want that? You want that sacrifice of a human? Like, that's not something that seems that like it would line up with your character. Offer Isaac as a burnt offering? That means, just so you understand what Abraham is thinking, that means that he would have to cut Isaac's throat, drain his blood, remove his organs, and then set his body on fire to his son. Think about that one person you love. You're telling me to take him and do this to him? If we don't know this is a test, it seems contrary to everything we know about God. And so Moses helps us very early on to know, okay, this is a test. That means there's a grade. That means that there's more going on here. And so Moses helps us by telling us that. This is why I also know that God wasn't testing to see what Abraham would do, because he knows Abraham's faith. He knows the level to which Abraham trusts him. He knows how this is going to end. He made a promise to Abraham about Isaac specifically, that Isaac is the one that the family is going to come from. And so he will keep it. He knows he's going to keep this promise. He knows that Isaac can't die, right? He knows that. God knows that. And so this is how I know that God's not testing Abraham so that God knows what's going to happen. He needs Abraham to see what's going to happen. So this test is for Abraham. But Abraham doesn't know it's a test, which makes this so much more amazing what he does. God doesn't say to Abraham, okay, Abraham, here's the test. He says, Abraham, take Isaac. And you notice he seems to lay it on really thick in verse 2. Look at verse 2 again. Doesn't it seem to really pull on Abraham's heartstrings when he says this? He says, Abraham, take your son, your only son, the son that you love. Remember that one? Take him and kill him. Sacrifice him as a burnt offering to me. And Abraham's mind had to be reeling, right? Processing what God was asking. But there would be no confusion about the instruction. But the implications would be hard. God wants me to kill my only son. The son I thought was the promised son. And I'm 120 years old now. So this seems crazy. But what is Abraham's job? What is his role? Trust God and be a father. Trust God. That has been the lesson of his life. Trust God. Trust God because he knows what he's doing. He knows what is best. And so, verse 3. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. This is Mount Moriah. He said to his servant, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we will come back to you. And Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, Father? Yes, my son, Abraham replied. The fire and the wood are here, Isaac said, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. So Abraham and Isaac load up and make this three-day trip to the place that God had indicated, possibly the hardest 3 days Abraham has been through. Imagine a lot of it probably sitting in silence, like not wanting to just bring it up as you travel. This three-day trip. To where God had showed them, told them to go. But he makes two statements as they head up the mountain, and those two statements really reveal to us where his mind is at, what his faith is doing. The first one is in verse 5 of chapter 22. And so in verse 5, he said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you. Interesting choice of words here, isn't it? Worship is our inner submission expressed in outward action, right? Our inner submission to what God wants expressed in what we do and how we act. And so he says, we're going to go worship, what he's actually said, what is worship in this case? Specifically, what God has asked him to do. Worship is kill your son. That's what God has said. That's what submission is for Abraham in this moment. And so what he's saying is, we're going to go, and I'm going to kill my son, and he's going to allow me to sacrifice him. Isaac is going to allow me, we're going to worship, so Isaac is going to allow me to kill him and sacrifice him in worshipful expression of our submission to God's will, his expressed commands, and then we will return. I'm going to go kill my son. He's going to let me kill him, and then the two of us are going to return to you when we're done with this. The author of Hebrews reveals to us that we'll look at later on in the year that inside Abraham's head was the belief that after he killed Isaac, that God would raise him from the dead. Because God promised Abraham that son, your son, would be the first of many descendants. It's in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 17 to 19. He says this, by faith Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his only one and only son, even though God had said to him, it's through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead. And so, in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death because he intended to kill him. So Abraham trusted God. What's his job? Trust God. Abraham trusted God to resolve the situation in a way that had never happened before in the history of the world. He trusted God so much that he figured that God would raise Isaac from the dead, that he would come back to life, that God's plan involved allowing Abraham to kill him, because that's obedience, but that God would bring his son back to life. That is how much he trusted God and his word. And when Isaac asks him about what's going on, Abraham says in verse 8, God is going to provide the lamb for the burnt offering. So he also believes not only that, well, we're going to go, I'm going to kill you, and you're going to let me kill you, but you're going to come back to life because we're coming back together. He not only believes that, but he also believes that after God raises Isaac from the dead, they'll still make an offering together, and that there will be a lamb provided for them by God to replace Isaac so that they can still worship God through making an offering together. This is an expansive, deep faith in God, that Abraham believes not only will God raise my son from the dead, but we'll still be able to obey him because he'll also give us a lamb to replace my son when he comes back to life. That is an expansive faith. And notice in the story, in this account, in verse 3, Isaac is carrying the wood. As we've said, Isaac is not a boy. Contrary to popular belief and culture and maybe the way we've heard this in the past, Isaac is a young adult. At his youngest, he's probably 16, maybe at his youngest, but he's probably early to mid-20s. This is not a little boy. This is the boy carrying an entire altar's worth of wood for 3 days. Like, this is not a little boy, right? His father is over 100 years old, can't carry much at that point, and so his son is doing all the lifting. This is maybe a 16-year-old, probably 20, 21 or older. This is a young man, right, that is going with him. So Abraham is not lifting the wood. And think about this. Abraham is not lifting a 20-year-old onto that altar. The only way Isaac is getting on that altar is if he gets up there himself. Verse 9, when they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of that wood. But I would add, he had some help. He had a willing participant in that moment. His son Isaac, this was a team effort. This is not just about this is just as much about Isaac's faith and trust as it is Abraham's faith and trust. And I want to know, on top of that mountain, when they're up there, how did that conversation go when they built this altar? It's my guess that Abraham has been honest and upfront with Isaac for his whole life, explaining things to him. And so I imagine this conversation went something like this. Isaac, God has asked us to sacrifice you. I don't know why he's asked this of us, because Abraham didn't know it was a test. I don't know why he's asked us to do this. But I've learned that when God speaks, I have to trust him and I have to obey him. I didn't trust him with Pharaoh. I lied and I manipulated, but God was faithful. And I didn't trust him when I had your brother Ishmael with Hagar, but God was faithful, and I have to trust him. I messed up again when I lied to Abimelech, but God was faithful. And I've learned that God is always faithful to his promise, and we can always trust him. So here's what I think is going to happen, and we're going to have to trust God, Isaac. I'm going to kill you, and God is going to raise you from the dead, because he promised that you will be the first in a large family. So Isaac, I believe you can't and won't die here today. I trust God. Do you trust God? Because I do. And I imagine Isaac said, yes, Dad, I do. He held out his hands as his father's aged fingers shook and tied those knots and helped him get into position on that altar. That is some trust. That is faith. Verse 10, then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son, and that word is that word of sacrifice that means to slit his throat. So he reached out his hand, took the knife to slay his son, but the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham, here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." So this is not the dagger held high about to plunge. This is the knife on the neck about to cut. When suddenly the voice calls out to stop him, and I would imagine there was probably already a little blood. Now Abraham is about to kill his son. He has every intention of killing him because God told him to, and he thinks the resolution is God will raise Isaac because he trusts in God. This is not the dramatic pause, something going to happen. This is not that. This is not the, like, look over your shoulder, now would be a great time for something to happen right before I do this because I'm about to do it, so here I go, 10, 9, 9 and a half, 8. This is not that. This is not that dramatic pause to see what happens. This is, he doesn't know it's a test because he has faith in God, he trusts God, he believes God, so he is about to cut his son's jugular vein. So this happens in a split second that God speaks to him and tells Abraham the test is over. And if I was Abraham, I would go, hold on, this was a test? Whew, yeah, give me a minute here. In verse 13, and Abraham looked up, and there, in a thicket, he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide," and to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." So I can imagine this is an incredibly emotional moment. I doubt that Isaac is on that altar for even another second when they hear that voice. And then that same knife probably cut his ropes quickly, right? Hugging, tears, shaking. There's a ram in the brush provided for the sacrifice so that the two of them can truly offer the burnt offering. And after they sacrifice, God reminds Abraham and Isaac of his promise to them. And this time he doubles down and he swears on it. We've talked about this. He swears on it an oath to reinforce the permanence of his promise. Your large family will one day have a descendant that will be a blessing, a gift to the whole world. And then the two of them walk back down the mountain together. Exactly as Abraham believed that they would. So what is our takeaway from this story? Abraham's job was to trust God and be a father. You have a similar job. If you claim to be a Christian, if you claim to be a believer, trust God and be a fill in the blank. A mom, a dad, a brother, a sister, a child, a grandparent, a coworker, an employee, a student. Trust God and be what God has you doing. I don't mean believe in God when I say trust God. I mean believe God. Many people who believe in God claim to believe God, but to what extent do they actually obey God? When it's convenient? When it makes sense? What is your line? What is your line for how far you're willing to go in obedience to God? You specifically, what is your line for how far you're willing to go? Unless it hurts financially, and then I might not. Unless it loses you friends or relationships, and then I might not obey God. Unless it ruins your fun or entertainment or enjoyment, and then I might not obey God. I don't trust him there. Unless it changes your quality of living, and then maybe not. That's my line for trusting God, for obeying God. Unless it damages your reputation or maybe humbles you, is that your line for obeying God, for how far you'll trust God? I'll trust you, but unless it makes me humiliated, unless I lose some of my reputation, then I might not obey. How far are you willing to go to obey God? There really should be no qualification, no condition on trusting God, because your job is to trust God in your role in life, period. Trust God. Believe God. James tells us that the only way we know if our faith is alive and is real is if we act on it, if it works, if we take some tests and see our grades. And this is actually what Abraham's offering of Isaac teaches us, James says, in James chapter 2. verses 17 and 22, he says, in the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. Someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe that there is one God. I believe in God. Good. Even the demons believe that, and they shudder. You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? Was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete or demonstrated fully by what he did. You don't just believe in God, you believe God, which means you obey God. You trust God in whatever role he has you in life, and you obey him. So where is the line? Believers in God reveal that they believe God by acting in faith, by demonstrating with actions that they trust his way, they trust his instructions over their own, they trust him to provide, to come through when they obey. They don't test him. They don't check and see. They don't check the waters first. We'll see if this works, right? I'll pray one time about God, trusting God with my finances, and when it doesn't work, I'll come back. No, they don't check the waters. They just do it. They trust him. They commit to it. They walk up the mountain without a sacrifice because they believe God, and they obey God. Abraham didn't hover and hesitate because that wouldn't be faith. He committed. People who believe in God show they believe God by committing themselves with abandon to what God has instructed, by obeying his words, all of them. He's trustworthy, right? Is he ever wrong? Will he not provide for you? Has he not promised to help you and that his way is better and offered you peace and abundance of life and more? His words are trustworthy, so we need to act like it. Do what he tells you to do. Do what the Bible instructs. Even if it doesn't always make sense, even if it doesn't match your feelings, God's not wrong. He is faithful. He is true. He is right. And your job is to trust and obey. So the next time you open your Bible and it gives you clear instruction for your life, for how you act or to think or believe, your response should be to commit yourself to doing whatever he instructs. You open it thinking, whatever this says, I'm going to obey because I trust him. Even if I don't like how it sounds, even if it doesn't match how I'm feeling, this is true. I'm going to obey. Commit to it before you ever open the book. Don't evaluate it like it's a test because you trust him. Let's pray.